Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. Three, two, one. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome to the Devil Advocates Radio Show, the happier happy hour Tuesday style. I want to thank Chris Taylor, Judge Chris Taylor, running for the 4th District of the Appellate Court, State of Wisconsin. A fine guest in hour one. If you missed her, go look it up, civicmedia.us, find the podcast. And coming right now, we got a fine legal eagle in her own regard. She is Milwaukee County Corporate Counsel. She is a friend of ours. She's our pal, Maggie Dawn. Maggie, welcome back to the show.
Hey, Maggie.
Oh, don't hear Maggie. Let's unmute her. Hi, Maggie Dawn. Still don't hear her. Well, we may have to have Maggie join with a phone or something.
Not an old-fashioned phone. Hang on, try again.
Maggie, I'm so sorry. We're not hearing you. Dom, in the meantime, while we figure Maggie out, and I figure it'll
We'll get it. Maggie, we'll figure it. We got the smartest people on it. One of the topics we're bringing Maggie on to discuss today, Supreme Court denies Trump request to withhold tax returns from Congress. Cleared the way for a congressional committee to examine Trump's tax returns, denying without comment.
There she is.
The former president's last-ditch efforts to extend the legal battle. 1,329 days, Maggie. And finally, this goes through. Are you with us, sister?
I certainly am.
All right.
It's about time, one. Two, it's been really interesting to watch this case progress. Now, keep in mind, this is simply the request to effectively keep the documents before the Supreme Court hears that case on its merits. But literally every court that's heard this case has found that Congress has a valid legislative purpose. One of the interesting bits of commentary about this is that the fact that Trump refused to disclose his tax returns of his own volition is in fact part of what makes it a valid legislative purpose for Congress to ask for the tax returns. Specifically, there are particular rules that apply to how presidents' tax returns are audited by the IRS, and Congress's legislative purpose is to inquire to see how is that process working with Donald Trump, especially because the very reason that they need to do that is because he didn't release his tax returns. So here we are. There's basically, you know, a month and some days before control of the House flips. So, you know, I don't know. Is the Treasury Department going to turn these suckers over like tomorrow? You know, but I can assure you that there will be reams of lawyers and forensic accountants going through these documents very quickly to see what they have to show. This is about 6 years of tax returns, both personal and some of his businesses. So this should be quite interesting.
Maggie Dawn, our fine guest, Milwaukee County Corporate Counsel. Maggie, what I want to talk about is leaking on the U.S. Supreme Court. New allegations have come down against Samuel Alito, an evangelical, a big donor, apparently claimed that he had insight on the Hobby Lobby deal before it became to public purview, and that Alito had shared that information. The couple he supposedly shared it with now deny it after the fact. But the information as being disclosed is apparently beyond reproach, at least in the evangelical community. This person has some notoriety for integrity, and Samuel Alito is perhaps a leaker. First and foremost, do you believe the reporting And what if he is?
I would say, as objectively as I can, without any rhetoric at all, that there are indicia of reasonableness. In other words, the information and evidence that this man has provided to date certainly support what he's saying. And that is, the one piece of evidence that I read about was a specific email that went from the wife of this couple that had dinner at the Alito's private home that said, emailed this evangelical minister and said, please call me. The dinner was really interesting. Not for email. That, I'm sorry, that provides a reasonable inference that what the man is saying is true. Why would you send that email and include the phrase, not for email? That tells me that there's something that you don't want to place in email, like, hey, I know the outcome of the Hobby Lobby decision. There's certainly enough factors here, and this particular evangelical minister's prior positions and his involvement and his sort of what I would call dark, dark, dark money lobbying of the Supreme Court that he helped organize, that he's frankly coming clean about now, that again really should give everyone incredible pause and require us and require Chief Justice Roberts to really analyze whether or not the ethics rules that apply to the Supreme Court have any meaning at all. And I would respectfully offer that with Ginni Thomas's entanglements and now this information, that the ethics rules of the Supreme Court need serious revision.
Maggie Dawn, I want to come back to the ethical code or lack thereof for Supreme Court justices. We had you on the air. You appeared on this fine program when the Dobbs leak occurred. And you had said that, you know, with your experience and your knowledge working for a federal judiciary in the past, you doubted that this came from a clerk, if I recall correctly, without the consent of the boss. Whoever the boss was, whoever the justice was, it wasn't leaked without them signing off on it. And we wondered, was this perhaps to buttress the opinion of the conservatives to keep anyone from leaking from this Alito decision? You know, didn't want Justice Roberts to pressure them and break one away and change the outcome of the decision. It was speculated at that time. And Roberts said, we're going to investigate. But we haven't seen any public disclosure that they found the leaker. And quite frankly, there is new reporting, as mentioned, that Alito was accused of being a leaker prior, historically. It would also make sense in that he wrote the Dobbs decision. If there was a leak, it probably came from the guy that wrote it.
First,
I'm just using logic here. I'm just saying.
Yeah. I mean, that's essentially what we began the segment with, right? And I'll just say this. I would be absolutely stunned beyond all recognition if a clerk did that. That's just an impossibility. Like, clerks are absolutely beholden to these judges for basically our entire careers. They support us. They write recommendations for us. Those are as close of a professional relationship that you will have as a lawyer probably in your life. They are foundational. The judge that I clerked for, Judge Michael Caney on the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, recently passed away, and the memorial service for him was filled, and it was filled with the hundreds of clerks that came through his chambers in his decades of service. And there was just a universal sense of overwhelming loss and gratitude. This is just not something that a clerk would do. So yes, I don't believe this happens without a justice permitting it to, or someone outside of the justices and clerks. Okay, that's just as a first point. To your second point, Mike, I couldn't agree more. This prior conduct, right, that has come out seems to support the inference that it would be Alito here that leaked, right? Like, he was the author of the Hobby Lobby decision. There's a credible accusation supported by documentary evidence from someone whose credibility has really been beyond reproach, particularly amongst the conservative right-wing evangelical branch of the Republican Party for decades, who's saying, yes, this happened, and yes, it was Alito. And as you pointed out correctly, Mike, Alito wrote the Hobby Lobby decision. If you are the author of the majority opinion of, or what you hope to be a majority opinion, you often find yourself as the judge that's authoring that majority or hopeful majority opinion, trying to convince the other judges that are either on the Supreme Court with you or in an appellate court situation, the other judges that are sitting in the panel. And they do that by circulating the opinion and meeting and trying to convince these other judges. Mike, I think the hypothesis that you put forward months ago when we first talked about this on the air, that Alito leaked it potentially to hold the line and prevent defection from the conservative wing of the court, looks to be more and more plausible. So we have two problems here. One, a potential violation of federal law by a Supreme Court judge that effectively meddled in the Supreme Court's processes. The second problem is the bigger and more insidious one, which is the Supreme Court polices itself, and it is proving singularly ineffective in doing so.
Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Maggie Dawn, Milwaukee County Corporate Counsel, and a friend of ours, sticking around for at least one more segment. Maggie, and as we go to break, I want to ponder this question. So what? If someone had a dinner party and relayed to someone at the dinner party that, hey, this is what's coming down, how does that impact anything? I mean, I saw the sting, man. I knew when the horse race, it was over before everyone else knew it was over. And I mean, unless we're betting on it, I while the ethics thing are concerning, you said violated federal law. I want to maybe get into that a little bit. But as the devil's advocate, I got to tell you, there's loose lips all the time. So what? We are the devil's advocates. So what? We're going to let Maggie tear me apart on that one. I'm going to sacrifice myself because I really want to know what federal laws and what is the overall practical implication, not just for the courts, but for society in general.
I want to ask you about the special counsel investigating the former president, the sexy stuff. Come back with us. Nothing but sexy Tuesdays with Milwaukee County Corporate Counsel Maggie Dawn.
The Devil's Advocates, radio for the 99%.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Maggie Dawn, Milwaukee County Corporate Counsel, sticking around. Maggie, talking about the leaking at the U.S. Supreme Court. Maybe it was Alito, maybe it wasn't. Why does it matter?
Yeah, the question that everybody should be asking is, How does this couple end up at the Alito's house having dinner and in a position to receive what is confidential government information during the course of this, what should be a personal event? Like, why would that even come up, right?
Right.
And here's what I was referring to when we talk about dark, dark, dark money. The evangelical movement within the Republican Party going back decades, and that this particular evangelical pastor, the whistleblower here ostensibly, helped organize were high dollar donations to the Supreme Court's Historical Society. By donating these large amounts, the donors were able to attend receptions and mingle with and meet Supreme Court justices. That is as clear of an example of money buying access as we've ever had.
It's like a fancy fireman's ball.
Correct. This is not different than how any political dinner works, except that it's supposed to be these donations to this historical society thing, right? you know, you buy people buy tables at politicians' things, but that's very clearly campaigning. It very clearly has a political purpose. The Supreme Court is supposed to be different. Once you get on the court, it's supposed to be absent from those political lobbying influences. That's why these judges are referred to as Article III judges or lifetime appointees. But effectively, the right-wing Christian alt-right found this roundabout way to curry favor and influence. And in fact, in addition to specifying that he knew about the Hobby Lobby decision ahead of time, this particular evangelical pastor went one further and is saying, I helped organize these pressure campaigns, these influence campaigns through the Supreme Court's Historical Society in an attempt to put people who shared our values on gay rights, gay marriage, women's fair pay, bodily autonomy, reproductive rights, birth control, et cetera, in other words, doesn't want any of that stuff, to put people who share that belief system, which is not representative of the majority of Americans, to put those people shoulder to shoulder and checkbook to hand in a room with Supreme Court justices. That's what happened. Friendships developed. And the elitos invited this couple to their private residence to have dinner. They knew that they shared a philosophical viewpoint. And it is very easy to see. Maybe a couple, you know, little Pinot Grigio, Sauvignon Blanc. Now we're on to the Pinot Noir, and maybe the cab comes out with the meat course.
Don't forget the White Claws.
Yeah, a few White Claws on the front end. This was a few years ago. They weren't quite that popular.
All right.
But a few cocktails that these people of one mindset that share this worldview, that their religious beliefs should dominate and describe and control the choices made by others, regardless of their religious beliefs, that these like-minded people in this private dinner, I can see some secrets being shared. Like, hey, Samuel, this big Hobby Lobby decision coming down. What do you think about that, right? And he tells them. But it is precisely not just the leak itself, but the access that was granted to the highest court in the land, granted to those with an agenda, a political agenda based on religious beliefs, that were able to access individual justices to attempt to effectively exert soft pressure over a period of time to get us where we are exactly today. It has worked. Now, remember, everybody, oh, people donate, make it access, blah, blah, blah. Yes, that is within the political branches. That is precisely not what is supposed to happen in the judiciary branch. As Judge Taylor aptly described in the half hour before I joined you gentlemen on the air, that is not the way the judiciary is supposed to work. It is a deep violation of their ethical standards. Frankly, the Congress should put in new ethics rules into the spending package that they're going to have to figure out before the year end and start government funding and prohibiting all private donations to the Supreme Court Historical Society, whatever that is.
Maggie Dawn, you got to stick around, man, because here's what happened. You just blew through another segment, and I haven't even had a chance to ask you about the special counsel tasked with perhaps prosecuting the former president. Well, let me start. Here's the quick one. Why? Why did Merrick Garland, 18 months in, finally get around to casting a special counsel? He could have done that 18 months ago. That's the first.
Yeah, I think, you know, that's an interesting question. I think people have been talking about it previously. I think first and foremost, the man is the former president, right? Like, okay, so how far do you extend that line, right? Is it every former senator? Well, how far removed from office do you have to be? Like, you can kind of get into a bit of a slippery slope. I do think when he announces his candidacy, and Dom has pointed out in the past some clear differentiation to say this isn't applying to every candidate. This is a candidate for the presidency of the United States. It's not a fringe candidate. He's fringe by way of his beliefs and the way that he operates, but he's certainly the standard bearer for the Republican Party today. And so it required a level of removal to demonstrate to the American people that justice should be blind and in its best moments is blind, and that laws apply equally to all men and women.
You know, Maggie Dawn, I'd keep you longer, but I feel like you got White Claws calling you. And the Alitos. You guys got Pinot Noir later, right?
Indeed. I'm meeting up with Sam and his wife and a few. We're gonna discuss Dobbs and Hobby Lobby.
Happy Thanksgiving to you, Maggie Dawn, Milwaukee County Corporate Counsel. Most importantly, friend of ours. You know, we'll keep peppering you after the holidays.
Happy Thanksgiving, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. Happy Thanksgiving,
back,
Maggie.
You know, a little early grievances. Tuesday feels like a Friday style. 844-967-2789. We'll be right back.
Nowadays, these partisan feelings are so strong.
The Devil's Advocates, tackling the issues you're not allowed to talk about at the dinner table.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. A lot of stormy songs. I even got a stormy book today. I was given a gift, the Stormy Daniels book, autographed. I don't think it was the real Stormy Daniels, though.
Yeah, I got a couple old Stormy DVDs you can have if you want, Curdy. I don't have anything I can play them on.
I bet they get real sticky in certain spots. Thank you to our most recent guest, a fine one, Milwaukee County. Corporate counsel Maggie Dawn. I laugh only because you're laughing, not because
no, we love Maggie. I mean, I could have gone
serious
with Maggie for
ass kicking guest, and yes. You know, if she didn't seemingly have that look of intensity towards future White Claws, I would have kept her on. But she kind of looked at me back, and I'm like, oh, I don't know what that look means. I'm staying for longer, so you know, I punted, Dom. I punted.
That's all right. That's all right. We love us some Maggie Dawn. Thank you, Maggie.
Hopefully, you know, by leaving, you wanting more, you'll come back the next time she's on. And, you know, we want you to join us on this show.
Yeah, well, the audience.
Early airing of the grievances. Poor Tom's been holding for a long time at 844-967-2789. Tom, what you got for us?
Hey, Tom.
Hey, guys. Hey, I'm a big Maggie fan, but I got to tell you, I think I'm the number one Chris Taylor fan. Now that the Devil's Advocate network is spreading all around Wisconsin and not just in Dane County, a lot of people might not know Chris Taylor as the chief defender of the First Amendment back in the days of the crackdown on the Solidarity thing.
Well, yes. I remember, I believe, Dom and I got arrested on July 23rd, and Chris Taylor was one of the first state lawmakers. I believe her and now State Senator Melissa Agard might have also been there. But Chris Taylor, and she had some angst on her face because we didn't know if the Capitol cops would have arrested state lawmakers. And she went down and she sang in the very same rotunda where they were arresting others, but not Chris Taylor. Amazing how that worked. And
yeah, weird how the long-haired guy with flip-flops and shorts, I got arrested, but the state senator does not.
Well, Dom, if you'll recall the second day, the day we came back, and Tom, you might recall this, I had a blue banker suit. I had my ticket sticking out of my lapel pocket, and you, Dom, were wearing every press credential you'd ever been issued in your entire career.
Press credentials.
And he walked around and talked to every Capitol cop and said, "Do I look like a reporter now?"
Yeah, definitely. When you guys, I would definitely encourage your listeners to Google Solidarity Voice Project. That's the documentary that they made about that time. In fact, Grudy, I think you're in it. Your arrest is in that documentary. It's a really short thing there, but it's basically Chris Taylor and Melissa Agard both are on that, talking about the fact that the First Amendment should not be shut down by Republicans. It's a great little lesson, and it's nice to send it out, you know, because it's been a long time. It's been a decade.
It has been, Tom. A decade. It feels like a long time when you say it's 10 years.
I know, but come on. I mean, you know, the Republicans are all about, you know, government overreach and oppression and da-da-da-da, and they're literally, here is Scott Walker, Wisconsin Republican, sending the police to arrest people singing silly songs that are critical of the governor because he doesn't like it. And you're going to say that all these other things are government oppression, but then this is the behavior that the Wisconsin GOP engages in? Come on.
You know, I'm not sure every caucus Democrat was supportive of the solidarity sing-along movement, the different individuals that would show up about noon every day to sing at Scott Wanker. But we always did, Don. We loved those guys and girls and people. You know, they're people. 844-967-2789. Some say the best kind of people. Kind of like Robert from West Dallas. How you doing, Robert? Welcome back.
Hey, Robert.
Good. How are you guys?
Excellent.
My grievance is Georgia with this stupid 1% rule. I mean, how many times does Raphael Warnock have to beat these guys at the ballot box?
Right.
You know, it takes a lot of effort and resources. You know, if people want to help, that's obviously welcome, whether it's phone calls or contribution, whatever it be. The nice thing is if they get that, they'll have subpoena power. So as much as these guys in the House say they want to investigate everything, they need to remind themselves that we win that seat, then we can investigate, you know, members of Congress that maybe were involved with planning January 6th. So just something to keep in mind. Have a great Thanksgiving.
Well, hey, thank you, Robert.
You too, Robert.
Back at you, man.
Real quick update. It just keeps coming out. A Business Insider reporting. The second woman who said Herschel Walker forced her to have an abortion stated that the Georgia Republican Senate nominee caused her collateral damage by denying the existence of their six-year romantic relationship. All I can do is tell the truth, and I'm telling the truth, and Walker knows I'm telling the truth. The woman, who goes by Jane Doe in an effort to protect her identity, said at a Tuesday press conference led by her attorney, Gloria Allred. This is what Warnock's up against, you know, the guy who forces exes to have an abortion, you know, the family values GOP mega Republican candidate. 844-967-2789.
Damn it. Well, it's because you interrupted
it
me.
Say it again.
No, I'm not doing it.
844-967-2789.
Dominic, Pick real from, quick, before we sorry, get to ahead. Dick and yeah. other callers in the queue, Herschel Walker. Do you see he dropped a new campaign ad against Warnock?
I did not.
Within hours of the Colorado Springs, Colorado, the club shooting, he dropped an anti-transgender ad in Georgia.
Sounds about right.
Little bit of the reporting. A CNN guest on Tuesday slammed Georgia Senate candidate Herschel Walker for releasing an ad targeting teen transgender athletes hours after a gunman murdered five people at the LGBTQ club in Colorado Springs. After host Don Lemon played a clip of the Walker ad, he brought on Los Angeles Times reporter LZ Ganderson to discuss its poor timing in the wake of the deadly attack in Colorado. Granderson started out by noting that it was strange to see Walker spending time talking about transgender athletes when polls showed voters are more concerned about issues such as the cost of living. Anyways, here's the statement. I'm confused because as you look at the exit polls, the issues that are on voters' mind, number one, obviously, is the economy. How do you put food on the table, paying for gas inflation? Number two is abortion. Well, he can't go down that road, can he, Dom?
I mean, sure he can. I mean, there's no shame.
Well, Dominic, following down from that are issues regarding security, safety, education. I did not see very many voter stress, confusion, or anxiety regarding trans athletes competing in sports. Granderson then suggested the ad is a sign that Walker has little else to run on against incumbent Senator Raphael Warnock. This seems to be a manufactured issue from Herschel Walker, who had nowhere else to turn because he has no credibility discussing the economy because we understand his business dealings. And he's surrounded by controversy regarding abortion. And where else he gonna turn? Hate. That's what this ad is. Hate. That's all he's got left to run on. The black Republicans got a hate on the transgenders because that's all that's left for him to appeal to. What, Republican-based voters?
I mean, I just don't get it. And I, you know, I'm the atheist here. I don't believe it. Raised Catholic, but you know how that went. That's why I'm the atheist. But I remember lots of, you know, talk about love thy neighbor. You know, hey, turn around and shake people's hands, like all that stuff. Really? And
peace.
Then they go to the
peace
hate
to you, because, right? Peace to your neighbor at the Catholic church.
Yeah. Peace be with you. There you go. Yeah, shake the hand. You know, all that kind of stuff. And which.
I was always a little weirded out, and I like meeting people, but not in church. I don't know why, but when the priest says meet your neighbor, that seems like a very inopportune time to make friends. I just don't like doing it. I'm telling.
Well, when you're forced to, I guess on that note, let me just throw this out there from the Raw story. The Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints confirmed Monday that the Club Q shooting suspect was a member of their church. Of course, we know that the suspect killed 5 people, at least at the time, and injured 24 more. Colorado Springs is a conservative community that is home to groups such as Focus on the Family and the Family Research Council, which has been labeled a hate, which both have been labeled hate groups by the Southern Poverty Law Center. And I love Colorado, man. I mean, once we started going out there, once legal weed became around, of course, I was a tourist and went out there quite a bit. And I didn't know what to expect. And when I found out like how Colorado Springs really, really was, I mean, wow, talk about conservative. And where's the love, man? I mean, if you're going to worship a God that says, you know, man shall not lay with a man, you're going to stick to that one. But again, bring it up. You find with the wools and linen mixing, also Leviticus. And don't even get me started on the shellfish. All right, but this is the one that you jump on. And this is a terrible situation. And if you read any of the reporting of this in the New York Times and Washington Post, some of the people that fought back, and a veteran specifically, you know, ran across and tackled the guy and, you know, eventually beat him with his own pistol, to my understanding. And one of the drag queens came over and started stomping on the dude with her heels. And this all went down in a matter of seconds. So and they've come to find out, like, this person, this assault, the killer, from some of the reading I've seen, you know, went through, you know, terrible bullying as a kid. Apparently the guy is about 300 pounds, as described in the New York Times, taken down by this army veteran who was, you know, just beside himself, went through his own trauma in Afghanistan and Iraq, and, you know, had to come home and deal with this.
And it was his daughter's boyfriend was one of the victims.
I mean, just absolutely terrible and absolutely terrible. And I just wonder, you know, where's the love? You know, I mean, you claim to be all the, you know, Christians and whatever, but isn't there a lot of love? You know, turn the other cheek, love thy neighbor, take in the immigrant, all that kind of stuff. Then where is this coming from?
Something I'd point out, and I wanted to look this up, but I didn't want to get this wrong, but the Mormon Church backed the recent bill that we know Tammy Baldwin has been shepherding through the Senate. They are supportive of the same-sex equality bill. And I actually saw that as an encouraging sign. Now, the Washington Post also has some reporting that the LDS Church is supportive of the bill as long as it's free to police boundaries for its own members.
Yeah, there's religion for you, folks. You know my opinion on that. 844-967-2789. Curdy, some of the other news of the legal news today, which we didn't get with our pal Maggie Dawn. Lindsey Graham, he had to testify.
Testify.
Today. Testify, my love.
I do declare.
Couldn't get out of it again. Fulton County had to testify, fought. A couple other issues, right? What's going on with the special master? Remember the whole documents thing? Well, they've got to have the special
master. The paperwork
master.
Crimes from Mar-a-Lago down?
Yes. Yeah, the top secret paperwork crimes. Why is there a special master? Well, because Trump and his legal team have no other option but to try to gum up the works, slow it down. That's what he does. Delay. And it's seemingly in front of a 3-judge panel, they're not really down for it. You know, why does the former president, who is now just a citizen, just like Crudy, just like me, just like Evan, just like every one of you, why does he get this treatment? Why does he get this special master? I mean, even the claims of executive privilege, that's not gonna fly. That pertains to the current president, not the last loser. So there's some serious headwinds going on right now today with the in Trump world. Alvin Bragg Crudy, apparently he's coming back around.
Don't even bring up his name,
man. What do you mean, come on?
It's never going to be Alvin Bragg Day up in here.
If he brings the charges, it could be Alvin Bragg. And here's something I read today that I was not aware of. Statute of limitations, right? You can't charge after so long. But it only applies, the clock ticks only when the state charges, when the person is in the state. Well, Donald Trump moved out of New York, so the clock stopped ticking. So Alvin Bragg can still go after Donald Trump within the statute of limitations because it has not run out yet in the state of New York.
That's thing rule.
Oh, come on, man.
Putting your hopes on Alvin Bragg in a extended overtime period.
Hey, man, just any of it. If it was you or me, Crudy, hell, the fixer got charged with it. Why not Trump? I mean, if Alvin Bragg is waiting for other people to lead, I'm okay with that. Let's line them up and knock them down.
You probably are still cheering for the U.S. to win the World Cup as well, and nobody else cares.
In time, you will call me Master.
You know, honey, the guys at work tell me there's a special club we can join if we meet in the bathroom.
Kicking ass and taking names since the Wisconsin uprising. The Devil's Advocates.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. The last segment of the day, hell of the week. We're going to take off. We'll be back next week, but you can join us right now. Air your grievances. Give us something to talk about. 844-967-2789.
Dominic, maybe anti-grievances. Maybe we could be thankful for
thankful?
You know what I'm thankful for? Badgers tipping off on the Civic Media Network tomorrow at 12:30. You know what? Part of the reason I won't be here doing a fine, great radio show with you, Dom.
Why is that, Michael?
Badgers, man. Dayton Flyers at Wisconsin. 12:30 tip-off tomorrow. Now, I believe that is a holiday tournament. So if they're successful, you know, they keep playing through the holidays.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I think they're in the Bahamas or something. We're not there. But I'm thankful I get to listen to, you know, Badger basketball and the Badger flagship here on the Civic Media Network. WFHR is listening to them as I was driving across the state. But you can get the Civic Media app and you can listen to Badgers right here on your favorite Civic Media stations. Don't listen to the other guys. They're not as good as us. They don't love it. I'm wearing my Badger hat, man. I mean it.
You always wear the Badger hat,
well,
man.
Well, I rotate them. I got several Badger hats.
You have several Badger hats?
Oh, yes. I mean, yeah. Some are quite tattered. Yes. I never get rid of a Badger hat. I keep them for perpetuity. And
really?
I wear
so
them.
You have like a 20-year-old Badger hat somewhere in the back of your closet?
Oh, yeah. Big time.
What do you do with it? I mean, is it there yet?
They become,
play with the dogs?
They become, well, my wife washes them. And then eventually they go in the dryer or whatever, and then they get, first you start losing the brim, and
right,
then when they
like
start
warm,
tattering and whatever,
miles.
Then they become like, you know, summer project hats. And then, you know, when they get very worn, they become painting hats. And eventually they'll just bury me in a coffin full of Badger hats. They'll all get, you know, go away. I wonder if they're biodegradable. I doubt it.
844-967-2789. Catherine from Madison. Crudy's probably biodegradable. What do you got for us, Catherine?
Catherine, happy Thanksgiving early.
Yes, and to you guys too. I'm not calling with a grievance. I'm calling with a really big thank you. I appreciate your program so much and everything you're doing throughout Wisconsin. You guys are just the greatest.
Well,
I've been
you have excellent taste, Catherine.
74. I sure do. But I've been listening to the radio since 74. I didn't have a TV for 14 years, and I've heard a lot of programs. You've got a really great station, and you guys are just the best. But I'm calling to thank you for not mentioning the name of this perpetrator in Colorado Springs. I really appreciate that, and I think the last thing we need to do is to give them any kind of fame at all, and I'm really glad you didn't mention his name.
Well, Catherine, I let Dom make that choice, and he chose not to.
Well, I appreciate that, Catherine, and I'm with you. And Yeah, F that guy and all that hate for sure. Thank you for the very kind words. 844-967-2789. Let's squeeze some more in before the end of the show. Farmer Bill, you will be next. Happy days, Farmer Bill. What do you got for us?
Hey, guys.
I'm thankful for people that turn down their radio before they call it the greatest talk show ever.
Oh, I'd like listening to myself. That's so good. I called in last week and didn't get to my thing, so I'm going to get to my stick. And that is Michigan somehow overturned, through whatever to end gerrymandering. And so I'd like to shift that focus to Wisconsin. And have you guys done any research? How can we do like Michigan and gerrymandering and have a good Thanksgiving?
Thank you, Farmer Bill. Best to Sarah Bill. And young Farmer Finn. Here is the only way it worked in the state of Michigan, as I understand it, Dom. Citizen-led referendums.
A ballot initiative, yes. Binding referendum.
The We the People movement. And I've mentioned this, Dom, and wait till the new year because I'm going to hammer this point, Farmer Bill. I think that it needs to be revisited here in the state of Wisconsin. We've actually asked Maggie Dawn. Maggie Dawn's quick opinion was effectively, this has not been visited. Binding citizen-initiated referendums have not been visited for 100 years in the state of Wisconsin. And with the current legislative gridlock, we've obviously got a gerrymandered legislature. We've got a Democratic governor, and it leaves both sides wanting. We, the people of any political stripe, are not going to get what we want. So get behind this new movement, citizen ballot initiatives here in the state of Wisconsin. If we don't get behind it, it's never going to happen. I mean, you and I, Dom, because we are the movers and shakers this state needs. And we would need legislative action. That means we need Republicans. But understand, Republicans are not going to get a hell of a lot of what they want, Bill. Republicans are going to be deadlocked with Tony Evers. He's going to veto it all, right? So they aren't getting it either. So how do you go around the vetoing governor? Well, citizen initiatives, binding referendums. But to make it so, we need a constitutional amendment. It's got to pass through the legislature twice, and then they would put it before a binding citizens referendum to change the Wisconsin Constitution. Last time they did that, Dominic took away the Chief Justice chair from Shirley Abrahamson.
Or we could just, elect a less conservative Supreme Court justice come next spring, and they could overturn the gerrymandered maps.
I'm not clear that the state. I would like to think in those terms. I mean, I would love to hear that because we care a lot about the next election, the February primary. Right now, there are at least three candidates. Dan Kelly, the very conservative former Wanker appointee, he is going to run. We know that Everett Mitchell, who is a district court judge here in Dane County, he has announced his candidacy. And we know that Janet Protasiewicz, and I hope I'm saying that right, Judge Janet, who I was introduced to directly by current Supreme Court Justice Rebecca Dallet, who apparently supports her. But I am less clear, Dom, even with the turning of the Supreme Court, even if we successfully turn the majority 4-3, because Patience Rogensack, one of the worst of the conservatives, she's the one that stole the Supreme Court, the chief's thing away from Shirley, but she's been the chief, and she is not running for re-election. And if we win the balance of the court, I'm still not clear that the state courts have the power to overturn the gerrymander, because it's run all the way up the flagpole to the U.S. Supreme Court prior. And my memory was that Kennedy let it happen. Gerrymanders, they're politically acceptable to the U.S. Supreme Court. That's my understanding. I don't know that the state courts can overturn it. We, the people, need to do something about it. Thank you to Judge Chris Taylor. Thank you to Attorney Maggie Dawn, Milwaukee County Corporate Counsel. If only we had either of those smart women to ask that question right now. But now you'll have to Google it or Ask a friend. Ask your crazy uncle.
Tune in next week. We'll find the answer for you. Hey, come back for the answers. That's what we provide all the time.
We'll be back on Monday. Have a wonderful Thanksgiving. Eat lots of turkey and watch some football. And Badgers on Civic Media.
Politics will turn.